pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. Rebound! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Okay, special guest on the podcast today, former Oklahoma State offensive lineman and current NFL player for the Cincinnati Bengals. Andrew Mitchell is joining us to talk a little bit about Oklahoma State football, some NFL stuff, and maybe a little bit about the Oklahoma City Thunder. So let's get to that right now. Okay, today on the podcast we have Andrew Mitchell of the Cincinnati Bengals joining us. Thanks for coming on, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Fun. What are you up to right now? I know with the NFL lockout and just kind of a lot of uncertainty in the air, what are you doing?
I tore my ACL obviously last preseason, and I spent the whole year in Cincinnati rehabbing. They released me they cleared me physically, I should say, to leave Cincinnati about 3 weeks after the regular season was over. So since the middle of January, I've really been in, I went to Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona, and I was training at a facility that one of my teammates from Cincinnati started called Zone Athletic Performance. And I was there from February until basically May. And then I've been back in Oklahoma ever since, just kind of training and doing what everyone else is doing, which is trying to get your body ready for whenever they do get this whole thing resolved.
So you tore your ACL last preseason, like you said, but you were still on the team for the whole year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got put on injured reserve, which basically means the organization still has your rights and you get paid as if you were playing, but you're not taking up a roster spot.
Is that the first big injury that you've had in your career?
No, I had the other ACL when I was in junior college, when I was still playing tight end before I switched offensive tackle. I had the other ACL reconstructed, so I am on my last leg, so to speak. If I have any other big surgeries, or I might be still on insurance or something.
You're on both of your last legs.
Yep.
Well, the NBA finals are going on. I know you follow other sports. Who are you rooting for in the finals?
We were talking earlier. I before Oklahoma City got a team, obviously, I was really a Dallas fan until this series, the Western Conference Finals. And after watching that whole series, I can't say that I'm a big supporter of Dallas. So actually, I would like to see LeBron and Miami win it, to be honest with you.
So it's basically you, everybody that lives in Miami, and maybe a few LeBron fans out there in America that are rooting for Miami.
I don't feel like it's really that way, to be honest with you. But
really?
I feel like everybody's a bandwagon Heat fan now, but I've never been one to do that sort of thing. But I honestly won't lose sleep either way, but like I said, I'm not a big Dallas.
Well, what turned you off to Dallas? Just the fact that they beat Oklahoma City, or?
Well, that probably didn't help, to be honest with you. But honestly, all opinions aside, I just don't think they will win regardless. So if I were just picking, if I were putting money on it, I would take Miami just because I feel like they have overwhelming talent and they're playing so well right now. And the thing is everyone jumps on LeBron or D. Wade on an off night, but in all reality, they don't both need to have a great night to be able to beat Dallas, and they've kind of showed that, so I don't see them losing to Dallas.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I don't really understand. I don't really understand Dallas or how they're successful, because it's like they got Dirk, and obviously he's great, but they don't have a go-to number two guy.
Well, and I think the other night, you know, Dirk had, what was it, like 34 points, and the rest of the starting five, the other four guys had something like 27 points.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you wonder how they got this far. I mean, obviously, they've got great shooters, and now they're supposedly a better defensive team, which is kind of their new MO or whatever. But at times it makes you wonder. You kind of scratch your head. But.
Yeah, it was weird. Did you get to go to any of the Oklahoma City and Dallas games in Oklahoma City?
I didn't. No.
Well, you're missing out. I mean, you're up there in Oklahoma right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I was out of town actually for some of it, and then I wasn't able to snag a ticket to any of the ones. Obviously, I think I was in town for two of the Oklahoma City games that were here, and I wasn't able to get a ticket. But I really, really, really wanted to go. I love going to the Thunder games, but obviously the playoff atmosphere is something I still need to experience.
Yeah, I went to one playoff game last year against the Lakers. I think it was the one they lost, Game 6, I believe, and it was pretty unbelievable. It was a lot like being at a big conference game at Gallagher Iba in terms of the atmosphere. Do you feel like having the Thunder in Oklahoma City is kind of taken away from the fervor, the passion that people have for OU and Oklahoma State?
Well, if you're referring to basketball, I'd say no, because no one went to OU games before that. So, but no, I don't think so. And in all reality, if the Thunder have done nothing else, it's given people that would otherwise be wearing OU t-shirts another kind of t-shirt to wear. So I feel like they've really brought something special.
So they're diversifying the wardrobe of Oklahomans everywhere.
Let's give everyone another option of t-shirt to wear. Yeah. No, but I don't think it has. I think OSU still has a good fan base, but they've struggled to really still put a really exciting team on the floor. I mean, last year or the season before last, they were doing all right, but they still kind of struggled to fill that place up in Stillwater. And then OU, of course, they've always struggled to sell out men's games. So, but no, I don't think it's had a negative impact at all.
Well, where do you stand? I mean, I know you're quite the NBA analyst, but where do you stand on this Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant stuff? You know, Westbrook took a lot of heat in the postseason, and Durant was criticized a little bit too for deferring to Westbrook. Where do you stand on all that?
Well, obviously, I think most people would agree that Durant's top three or four players in the league, and he is the franchise player here. And Russell Westbrook is an extremely unique talent. I mean, he can do things that maybe one or two other guys in the NBA can do physically as far as driving the basketball and getting to the rack and everything like that. But you couldn't help but notice that at key times, Russell Westbrook couldn't help but just make a huge mistake at the absolute worst time. And in my opinion, I don't care if you score 35, 40 points. If in the key moment in the game you turn the ball over or make a bad decision, it really is all for naught, in my opinion. So, I wouldn't be upset if he was dealt this offseason, to be honest with you, because I think if we had a really good facilitator and assist guy, he'd probably end up being a better team in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're not going to deal him, I don't think, but I think you have a point in what you said about him making the worst mistake at the absolute wrong time, and it's something that either he has to improve or they're not going to, advance further than they have so far.
And can he improve? Yes, and he probably will, but it might be some more growing pains for another year or two for him to be able to understand that he isn't the outright scorer on that team.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's switch gears. Let's talk about the Bengals a little bit. You've been there you've been there 1 or 2 years?
Just this season. It was my rookie season. I obviously graduated from Oklahoma State last May.
And you spent you were picked up as a free agent, correct, out of Oklahoma State?
Yep. I signed a contract, I think it was about 20 minutes after the last round of the draft last year on draft day.
So how does that work? Do they just call you and say, hey, we're not going to draft you, but we want you to sign this contract? Or what's the process there?
Surprisingly, the whole free agent game in the NFL is a lot like college recruiting. You have contact with teams before the draft, much like a guy that's going to be drafted. And, of course, most teams will tell you, well, we might take you at this last pick. And even all during the draft, you'll have teams calling you or your agent saying, we don't know what we're going to do with this last pick. We might use it on them, just sit tight kind of thing. They basically are just baiting you to keep you on the line so that as soon as the last pick is made, they can call you and, you know, use their so-called loyalty they built up with you up to that point as a way of getting you to choose to sign with them as over, you know, whatever other teams were interested in you.
Right.
So, yeah, but the free agent, rookie free agent signings, you know, honestly, within an hour and a half of the draft, the guys that people really want are gone. It happens very, very fast. So.
Wow, that's crazy. It does sound a lot like college recruiting in that everybody's kind of, you know, playing this game with you that, oh, well, we might pick you or we might not, or, you can sign with us afterwards. So was it Marvin Lewis that was on the phone with you, or who was calling you?
Pre-draft, it was one of the personnel guys.
Okay.
And then on the day of, it was the O-line coach, Paul Alexander, and, of course, one of the personnel guys to kind of get the contract stuff straightened out. But most of it, actually, the day of the draft goes between them and your agent. They kind of take care of it. So
it's kind of, it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's fairly rare to be picked up as a free agent out of college and still make an NFL roster. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of free agents on every team if you look around the league. And I think this year there was 23 undrafted guys that were in the Pro Bowl, on the Pro Bowl rosters on either side.
Wow.
So those guys make up, you know, a good portion of NFL rosters. It's really interesting. But, yeah, were they on 53-man rosters their rookie seasons? Most of them, probably not. They kind of become a journeyman and then have a breakout year for some of them or something like that. But, you know, in my situation, it if you're not healthy, you're not helping yourself, obviously. They always say your availability is the most important thing, especially as a rookie. You're kind of behind the eight ball as it is, especially as a free agent. So you don't want to get hurt like I did. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to come out in that situation and make a team for sure.
Well, there's a lot of guys, a lot of players on the Bengals that probably a lot of our listeners are familiar with. Obviously, Carson Palmer, Ocho Cinco, but people like Jordan Shipley, who played in the Big 12, Jermaine Gresham, played at OU, and then the newly drafted A.J. Green and Andy Dalton. Are you kind of friends with these younger guys that people are familiar with, or do you tend to hang out with just the linemen, or kind of what's the relationship dynamic there?
You know, most rookies end up kind of hanging out with your rookie class because you go through the rookie mini camp together, the orientation stuff. You're in a lot of meetings that are just rookie meetings. You kind of bond with those guys before anybody else on the team. Shipley came in and he was, I mean, like a coach's dream from the get-go. He takes his job very seriously, and you can see why he was so successful at UT because, I mean, he's like a gym rat who also has just like an unbelievable amount of talent. Obviously, he has great quickness and speed and all that, but he's just a good football player. He knows how to play the position, and he's a perfect fit for a slot receiver in the NFL. And then Jermaine, we actually were on the same flight to our rookie mini camp, so that's kind of when we got to know each other that first part of May last year after the draft. And so me and him got to know each other fairly quickly. But, yeah, as the season went along, a lot of times you end up spending time with the other offensive linemen and stuff like that. So.
Well, you're not, like, good friends with Gresham, are you?
We're not super tight, no, but we became pretty good buddies over the course of the season.
Who's the funniest guy in the Bengals locker room?
I guess the obvious pick would be Ocho Cinco because he tries very hard to be funny, and he is funny sometimes. But we have a guy who I honestly think is the funniest guy. His name's Bobby Williams. He's like an 11th, 12th year offensive guard. He played right guard for us. And he's just a guy that doesn't try to be funny, but he's just like an old, you know, an old crafty veteran that just always has something funny. So I liked him a lot.
Is he Galifianakis funny, or is he like, I mean, is he dry? Is he out?
He's a 6'4", probably 330-pound dude who just, it's the way he talks, it's hard to explain, but he acts very, very serious all the time, but it comes across as being really funny one of those times. But no, not Zach Galifianakis, but something else. I don't know quite what to compare him to.
Now, you played a little bit with Brandon Whedon. Obviously, he never started while you were there. How would you compare him to a guy like Carson Palmer? Both seem to me as pretty immobile with great arms and kind of a great sense of what's going on. Does he compare well to Palmer?
I suppose you could draw some comparisons. I mean, really, with Whedon, you can draw comparisons with a lot of NFL guys just physically. And, you know, Carson, I guess, would be considered more of a laid-back type of guy. And Whedon also, you know, that he was almost considered a laid-back guy to a fault, I guess, before he became the starter, which was a little, I think, over-exaggerated. But I guess in that way they are. But they're both competitive guys. Calm demeanor, which I think for a quarterback is really huge, you know, to have that kind of demeanor on the field. And it's something that's often overlooked. I guess in those ways, yeah, they are similar.
So you think you're saying Whedon's laid-backness was overhyped, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that, you know, when you're in a situation he was in where you're not the guy, it's really easy for maybe the coaches to perceive that as you're not taking it seriously. But whenever you're doing, Whedon always did everything he was supposed to do, and he always was prepared and ready to do whatever they asked him to do. But yeah, I think he's just a laid-back guy. He's kind of been there, done that kind of guy. So he didn't maybe show in practice or things like that he was stressing about things that maybe I don't know, to be honest with you, why that would be considered a big deal. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not only not the guy, but not even the backup guy whenever,
right.
Well, I guess before the Colorado game.
Right. And without getting into that a whole lot, there wasn't anybody in the locker room that agreed with that, but you know, just the way it is sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not sure there was anybody in the stadium that agreed with it either. Do you think Whedon projects well as a pro prospect? I know he's an older guy. He's older than both of us, but do you think he's going to get drafted high, or how do you think that's all going to play out?
You know, you never know. I don't see why not. Obviously, people would say that his age is a knock. But there's been other guys that have done it, that have been done the whole pro baseball thing and then come out and that's really not affected their draft status. He looked like Winky and Drew Henson, guys like that. It really didn't affect them being drafted high. So I think if he, you know, obviously, you don't want to put the cart before the horse or anything like that, but if he has a season like he had last year and he can show some improvement in getting the ball out quicker at times and maybe recognizing defenses and things like that a little better, I don't think there's any reason he wouldn't be, you know, a first day, first round kind of guy.
Gun to your head, who has a better pro career, him or Justin Blackman?
I'll say, man, just because Whedon's 29 and Blackman's like 19, I'll say Justin Blackman.
Okay.
I think they're both have every reason to do very, very well.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk for a minute. We'll wrap it up here in a few minutes, but I want to talk about Twitter real quick. You're on Twitter, and I noticed that a lot of the people that you follow on Twitter are sports reporters or sports writers, journalists, newspaper writers, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do pro athletes? I mean, I know they all say they don't read anything. Peyton Manning says, you know, he doesn't read the newspapers, whatever. Do they actually read the newspapers?
I would say 99% of them do, yes. Are there guys that don't? Yeah. But, I mean, personally, like in the situation we're in right now, with the lockout, for example, your agents, each guy's agent does his best to keep you updated, but to be completely honest with you, there might be a two or three agents in the business that actually have any kind of inside connection to the negotiations or meetings that go on, to where they could give you more information than you can find in a published article on the internet. So that's one of the reasons I like Twitter, honestly, is I don't use it a whole lot for tweeting as much as I do, just because you can get news quicker really than any other way. So I like that because in our situation right now, it's a good way to get info fairly up to date, you know, on the whole situation.
Who's your favorite person to follow on Twitter?
There's a guy named Rob Delaney. He's like a writer comedian. He writes some pretty ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, so I think that was like, I was looking at who you're following today. It was like the last guy that you followed. He had a really weird avatar, I think. Like the picture that he had. What was he doing in that?
I don't know. He's wearing a banana hammock, though. So, yeah, he's a funny dude.
What about as far as sports go?
Jeez. Obviously, Ocho Cinco's Mr. Twitter, so, I mean, sometimes it's fun to see what crazy stuff he's up to, but, other than that, the guys I worked out with out in Arizona, Evan Mathis, the guy that founded Zone Athletic Performance, he's a funny guy. We get along pretty well, so I like following him and see what's going on out there. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, I got to, before we go, I have to get a prediction out of you for Oklahoma State football this year. Obviously, Dez Bryant the other day said OSU is going to win the national title. Might be a little presumptuous, but what do you think about the team this year? You know, obviously you played with a lot of those guys. You know the coaching staff pretty well. How do you think they're going to do this year?
I don't see any reason they would have a worse year wins and losses, as far as wins and losses go, than last year. And I didn't get to go to the spring game. I was going to try and go, and I couldn't make it. So I haven't really seen some of the younger guys that didn't play a lot last year. But based on what I do know, offensively, they shouldn't miss a beat, which is great. But I think the question mark with Oklahoma State, and it will continue to be, obviously, is your defensive front, and that being the hardest positions to recruit and get guys on campus that can really be disruptive on defense. And I think you look at the top teams in BCS conferences around the country, and that's the common thread you'll see, is if not dominant, close to dominant defensive tackles and defensive linemen across the front can really make, you know, you look at teams like, you know, Alabama, who traditionally aren't just explosive offenses, but when they've been able to have these disruptive NFL talent linemen on their team, it makes a world of difference in being able to be a championship style team. So I think it'll come down to that, but I see no reason they won't win at least 10 or 11 games again. But like I said, if they go beyond that, will be determined by how well their defensive front plays, which I don't honestly know a whole lot about who they are.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Well, Andrew, I appreciate you coming on. All our listeners can follow Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Mitch. I've talked to your brothers a little bit online. You're a lot cooler than they are, so I appreciate you. They were trying to talk me into having them on a podcast, and I don't know what I would talk about with them. So
you'd be better off grabbing some guy at the gas station or something, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I could probably have my wife on, and she'd talk better about sports than they would. But appreciate you coming on. I know it's your birthday, I believe, this weekend.
It is.
So,
yeah.
A happy early birthday. Keep it safe. And we'll have you on again sometime.
All right. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
All right.
Bye.